This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly brought to you by Sheet Music Plus.
Progress is basically the key that all teachers are looking for. How do you make a student progress quickly? That'll make them feel good, keep their interest.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the first episode of Season 3, 2018 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and if this is your first time here, thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to episode number 133, and a very special welcome if you're one of my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community members. The Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. And remember that the simplest way to listen to these podcasts is always via my piano teaching app, which we've actually recently updated. Just search for Tim Topham in your favorite app store and listen as you walk the dog, cook dinner, work out at the gym, or clean the house. In today's episode, we're digging into that perennial favorite conversation of teachers around the world, practice. Or rather, the lack of practice that we so often experience from our students. We're going to unpack what I feel is the missing ingredient in students' home practice and how technology is potentially helping solve this problem with startling effectiveness. Also, listen out for an ongoing discount to one of the most effective practice software tools that we discuss on the market towards the end of today's interview. Today's show notes and a full transcript are now available at timtopham.com/episode133. My guest today did his undergraduate studies in performance and pedagogy at UNC and is currently CEO of Piano Marvel, an online practice and assessment tool for piano students. He conducts seminars across the US on student motivation, sight reading, technique, collaborative performance, and composition, and has been a teacher and performer throughout his career. Welcome to the show, Aaron Garner.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, look, it's great. I've known about the software that you've created. It's called Piano Marvel, as I mentioned in the introduction, for quite a while now. But it really came to life for me earlier this year when I saw you present it in action, and that was at the MTNA in Florida. And I think while your presentation was fantastic, it was quite unusual. You performed. You did some Blues Brothers, Dark Glasses, or something. You know, I can remember some really great sort of acting and presenting on your part and your team. But the real thing that hooked me was when you had a young boy. It must have been 10 or 12, actually using your app on stage live and seeing it in action, seeing his engagement, seeing his response, and how he wanted to beat his last score and keep on practicing. That was just the best marketing I'd ever seen. I think you did an absolutely brilliant job there. So what I thought we'd do today is just talk a little bit about some of the problems with practice that we all struggle with, and then we'll get into more of the solution that you've created in your software called Piano Marvel. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Fantastic. So I found actually a quote on your website I wanted to start with because I think it sums up our situation quite well for many teachers. So for those of you listening, have a listen and see if this is something that you can relate to. You said, there are many teachers out there who feel comfortable with teaching piano the way they were taught. This is just one, there's just one problem with that. The reason that most teachers ever reached a high level of skill on the piano is because they are exceptional. If you are a piano teacher, you are almost certainly a great student, at least at some point. The average student, however, may not have the same aptitude to learning music as their teachers were when they were students. So after a year or two of lessons, the traditional teaching methods wear down the average student's interests as the difficulty becomes too much and all of a sudden the student quits and takes up sport. If you have taught piano for more than a few years, you already know what we mean here. So I just grabbed that from your website and I thought that was really understandable because we're all very conscious that technology is moving society in general in lots of different places. And we need to make sure we keep up with that. We know our students are going to YouTube to learn to play things without our help. So I guess
The question, I guess, is, you know, how is technology going to play an impact, in your opinion, in the practice of the future for students with your app or other apps generally, just technology?
So what I'd like to, I guess, address is that point where you brought up earlier. We unintentionally, we kind of weed out a lot of students by teaching the same way that we've been taught. And if they survive, then they go on. If not, they stop with their interest in practicing. They're not progressing as quickly as they should in order to keep interested. And so I've gone, it was back in, I think, 1996, I was doing my doctorate in piano performance and teaching at the University of Northern Colorado. And a few tools started coming out. One of them was in, I think it was Music Ace, where they had a metronome thing where you'd click on the space bar and it would give you an assessment of whether you got the right rhythm or not. And I thought that was totally ingenious. I thought, what if it could do that with notes and rhythms all put together? So you put a score up there for the student and it shows them what they got right and what they got wrong and give them that instant feedback, turn it kind of into a game. Another thing that caught my attention was the immersion of background accompaniments with these teaching books. And you had all these cool background accompaniments that they could make these really easy songs sound fun. The problem was you put it in a CD player and you had to push start, and it took too long and you lost interest. And so I had this envision of putting all these pieces together to make learning a lot more intuitive and quick and fun, helping the student to progress more quickly. And I think that was kind of the beginning of where this idea came from.
Right. Why do you think effective practice is such an issue for so many students these days? What are some of the contributing factors?
I think it's the issue is that it is the key to motivation. If they're not progressing, they're going to lose motivation. If they don't have motivation, they'll stop practicing. If they stop practicing, then I'm not enjoying the lessons with them. They're not enjoying it, and they're going to quit. And so progress is basically the key that all teachers are looking for. How do you make a student progress quickly? That'll make them feel good, keep their interest.
And I think that's obviously the biggest issue for all of us as piano teachers is trying to keep those students engaged. We all know that there will always be a small core of students in our studio who are just phenomenally motivated. They're superstars. They're doing amazing things. But, you know, the bulk of them, or maybe not the bulk of them, but, you know, a good number are always in that struggling category. So, you know, that finding, and I've talked about motivation with a number of people on the podcast before, about finding time, about conflicting activities that students are all doing as well. But what you're saying, I think, is that it really comes down to the self-motivation causing the practice, causing the progress, causing more self-motivation. And it's this kind of flywheel effect, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So the other thing that I think is really missing for students at home is feedback. So how do they know that they're doing it right? How do they do it better this time than last time? What's a perfect playthrough actually sound like? And sure, they can listen, but I don't know about you, but, you know, half the time I'll say to my students, well, you know, what do you give you that out of 10? And they'll go, well, I don't know. Or, you know, how did that actually sound? Was it good? And they often really struggle to listen clearly to themselves. So, and I know this is a great feature in your software, but without the use of technology, is there a way that students can get that kind of feedback at home with their practice?
That's really hard, really, really hard, because what happens is they come to the lesson once a week and sit there for half an hour to an hour, and the teacher is that feedback person. They're not just feedback, but they're also motivating and teaching them how to be expressive. A lot of times what you find with teachers is they teach in layers. The student's only ready to learn, just this layer that first you got to get the notes right and you've got to get the rhythms right. And once they have that, then you can start teaching phrasing. Once they have that, you start teaching dynamics. And there are hundreds of layers, and teachers can just keep teaching deeper and deeper and deeper. But the first thing first is we have to teach them the notes so that we can move into the next layer. And a teacher will spend a lot of time sitting there watching them practice. They point to a note and say, play this note. Oh, that's the wrong note. Let me help you with that. Oh, you got to move your hand in this position. Okay, now your rhythm's wrong. Let me help you with that rhythm. It should go like this. And so we give them that feedback and then send them home. And now they don't have any of that feedback. So they basically need the teacher to go home with them if they're going to keep progressing, or they just work on what the teacher gave them an assignment for. What I have done is now my teaching's basically flipped upside down. During the lesson, I do more training on how to practice and how to use the technology. So when they leave me, they learn very quickly. And so I do so much more teaching, hey, here's how you use this tool. Here's how you use this tool. And then I give them a challenge. I say, go home. And nobody's ever gone that far before. See if you can get down to the bottom of that star. And I know they have all the tools that they can finish that. I had a funny story with, it's really hard to think outside the box. I'm a very traditionalist. I went through and did a pedagogical degree. And so as I have these students come in, I think pedagogically, this is the most sound way to do it. But I've never had the tools before. So even though I've created this program, I was still teaching like I didn't have these tools. And one day a student came and said, I just learned arabesque. And I said, wait a minute. I didn't give you that song. You're not ready for that song yet. Well, let me see what you did. And he had shown me how he went through every star and he got down to the bottom. And I said, okay, I want you to play it for me. This took 7 days. Normally it would take me about 2 months to get this ready for a recital. And they played it almost perfectly. And we sat down and we had the best lesson ever. I said, you know what? This student is totally ready for working on the attack and the staccatos and all these things. And I was having a ball just teaching. I thought, this is awesome. This is how I should teach all my lessons. And it dawned on me that I was teaching the old way, the traditional way without the tools we've never had before. It's kind of like, you know, chopping down a tree. You get this axe and you're like, you know how to use this axe, right? You just hit the tree until it falls over, and you give them a chainsaw, and it takes a little bit of learning how to use this new tool. But man, if you pick up that chainsaw, you learn how to use it. You can go through some trees really quickly.
Yeah, right.
Teachers, a lot of times they see these tools and they're intimidated because it's going to take them time to learn how to use them. But man, when they do, they can crank out some real productive students.
Right. Well, I think the other concern is that software is going to replace teaching, or the technology means that we'll actually have less students and less to do, or, you know, that kind of an approach. Have you heard that? And what would you say to teachers in that category?
Yeah, I've heard that concern a lot. And I think this is the reason why I hear this concern a lot is when I go in and do a show, I show teachers that students can learn a song in about 1/10 the time that they're used to doing it. And a teacher starts thinking, well, if they can learn it that fast without me, then why do they need me? The problem is they're not thinking about what their real talent is. Their talent is not sitting there spoon feeding notes and showing them how to learn a song. There are things that computers do really well, and there are things that humans do really well. And computers cannot do what a human can do. And so really, it just takes a teacher to say, look, if a computer can teach the monotonous stuff and the repetition, and you can then devote your time to the things that humans do best with, which is emotion and expression, then you start to see that you're not being replaced. Instead, you're getting a teacher that's teaching alongside with you, doing the stuff that's not fun, so that you have time to teach the expression. The second thing that's the biggest thing to think about is, and I see this happen a lot, people get into the software and they think, I'm going to get, you know, I learned how to do these songs, so I'm going to start, you know, won't use my teacher anymore. The problem is they get through a song and then they're stuck. They're like, oh, what's next? Well, a teacher has a bag of tricks. They know the student's mentality, their personality. they have 1,000 songs in their back pocket and they can say, look, I know what's perfect for the student coming up that's going to be motivational for him. And they're always thinking on their toes, creating these plans around this student, which a computer can never do.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit about a mindset shift, I think, from the same thing's happening in classrooms. I've been a classroom teacher for many years. And, you know, there's that shift now to the flipped style of learning more. So getting kids to do the stuff that they can do, listening to lectures and taking notes, they can do all that at home. You don't need a teacher for that. What you need the teacher for is getting more creative and helping with problem solving and getting groups of people together to achieve things. So I guess what you're saying is that it's taking a different look at the role of the teacher in a music lesson from being teaching the notes in a lesson to actually let's do that with technology because that's much more efficient, as you've said, and let's work on the more interesting, the more human aspects of it. And I think that's really crucial. There might be people listening who don't actually know what we're talking about, haven't explored Piano Marvel. So can you give us a quick elevator pitch? What's Piano Marvel all about and how does it work?
Okay. Yeah. There's so many aspects to the program. It's hard to know where to begin because we have lessons in there. You know how I mentioned earlier, you've got this lesson book where you go through and how we wanted the background accompaniment and for it to assess you. So there's that one aspect in that you can play through your lesson materials. It shows you what you did right and wrong, and you kind of just work your way through it with all that feedback. But we also have the standard assessment of sight reading, which is a sight reading test and training system where they go in and they read at their level and it pushes them to just higher levels of reading. And then we also now have a new component where you can upload your own music and your own lessons and your own curriculum, even your own books, and pull from other books and say, you know, I like this out of this book or this out of this book. And you can kind of make your own little guide for students and it'll walk them through step by step. One of my favorite aspects, however, is, and this is what I did in that MTNA show that you were talking about. I'll take a new student and I'll say, you've never seen this program before. And I'll play a song for them and I'll say, how long would the song take you to learn it? And they're like, whoa, that looks hard. That'll take me a year. Like the one in MTNA, it's like 2 years, it'll take me. And I said, you got 7 days. And his eyes got real big. And he's like, how am I going to do that? And I said, this is how you do it. And I opened up the music and I showed him there's a grid that they click on the very first star and it opens up and they have a video they can watch that shows them anything, any tricks or where to put your hands or anything they need. And then there's a prepare mode where they click on that and it'll start and it'll kind of like just point at the first note and say, play this. And once they play it, it'll move on to the next note, kind of like how a teacher does. And then once they've mastered that, then they're ready to pass it off. And so once they do get into the assess mode, they play it and it'll show them which notes they got right, which ones they got wrong, and give you a score. Now that score could be, let's say it's a 37%. And then after that, they try it again. They get maybe a 59% and they can see they're progressing. And then they get a 92% and they're getting excited. And then all of a sudden they get 100% and they're jumping out of their chair like, I did it. Well, what they don't realize is happening is we're building in muscle memory into their fingers. It's like this perfect practice, but we're doing it really slow. So yeah. We trick students into practicing slowly and perfectly in small sections, but they feel like it's a game and it keeps their mind engaged. And so when they're ready to go to the next section, then they move on and they just pick it up just super fast because they've practiced slowly, correctly, without even realizing what's going on. And they've practiced with a metronome, so their timing is perfect.
Yeah, I think this is the missing ingredient in music practice for students at home. It's short-term goals, it's immediate feedback, and it's improving in levels as they go through. So it has got that video game kind of approach, but I don't want to call it a video game because people have pictures of what that would look like. It's very much educational, but it uses some of the gamification ideas of achieving scores, I guess, before you move on and unlock the left hand of the next four bars or the right hand of this section. But as you say, the thing that I've seen, and you've worked with one of my students remotely testing out this software with Roman, my student, and he was just, it was just brilliant watching him practice slowly and want to play it again and again and again because he could not get that 100%. So we went slowly and he did it again and again. It was quite remarkable. I was really blown away. So I've seen it in action on the stage, MTNA. I've seen it in action in my studio. And I really have to say this is, I think this is going to be quite revolutionary. As long as teachers, as we said before, take that mindset shift about what their role is. So I think that's great. Do you start this software with the very beginners, or is this something that students take on after maybe 6 months, a year of lessons?
It's interesting. Yesterday, or what was it, Friday, Saturday, we did a conference and we wanted to demonstrate how this would work with a student who's never had piano lessons. It's a brand new student. So I pulled him in and we had, I don't know, 40 teachers there watching this live lesson with a brand new student who's never played before. And I showed him how I would introduce the software and how to pick a song ideal for this student. And I think the teachers were shocked. I gave them Carol of the Bells level 4 to learn in 7 days. And the mom's eyes, because I had the mother there, and she just thought, there's no way my daughter's going to do this in 7 days. And we let her start. And she started going through the program and her mom's eyes got just as big and she's super excited. Her kids just jumping up, clapping and excited and moving right through the software. She got up to, I think, 11% complete with the song within 10 minutes. And then I asked her mom, I said, now, do you think she could learn this song? She's like, I think she could do it in a week.
Yeah. That's so right.
It's so easy. Once you see a student's engagement with it, it's like, oh, that totally makes sense.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, Sheet Music Plus. I'm sure you've heard of Sheet Music Plus. It's always one of the top search results when you're looking for sheet music because they have the world's largest collection. But did you know they also have a program to help piano teachers save money on their orders? The Easy Rebates program is exclusively for music teachers and gets you things like 8% cash back on all your orders. You can also earn 8% cash back on purchases by your students if you set up lists of music to buy. And I've done this in the past, and not only does it make the students or the parents' life easier, you also get that little benefit as well. There's also a $5 bonus when you refer a new member to the program, and it's completely free to join. Since Sheet Music Plus has over 1 million titles, including print and digital downloads, it's the best place to go when you have student requests or need something for an upcoming recital. So you should definitely take advantage of this free program. Go to sheetmusicplus.com/easyrebates, EASYREBATES, to find out more and sign up today.
So when you're teaching with it, do you still teach yourself privately or in groups or anything like that?
I teach in groups. I love teaching groups. I've taught college groups. I've taught in an elementary school ages 5 through 6. I've taught at high school. And then I taught privately one-on-one most of my career. And then started, you know, once I got the software, I started thinking, look, they're working so productive. I'm going to start teaching his brother at the same time who's sitting on the couch waiting for his lesson. So I started teaching two at a time. And then I got to where I was teaching them so efficiently and they're learning so quickly, I thought I could handle more people. I'm like, I don't have to sit and hover over them if I learn how to do it right. And so I started teaching groups of 4 and 6. And I really enjoy teaching groups because there's a lot of excitement when you get partners and you do things together. It's not as lonely as a one-on-one lesson, but I still do one-on-one lessons for a lot of what I do as well. So there's a place for everything.
Yep. And do you always use Piano Marvel actually in lessons, or does it tend to be that they use it at home and they come to you with questions, or they can then play the piece and then you work on the expression and things? Or do you use it in the lesson, I guess? That's my question.
Yeah, I have found that it is very effective in lessons for all ages, regardless of their ability, even through a doctoral student. So I do like them to work a lot at home, but even when they come to the lesson, I still teach them tricks, how to use the software. So we're in the software working a lot. And like, I'll pair them up a lot of times. You're doing the primo, you're doing the secondo, get started. And then as they're working on that, and maybe let's say I have four people working at the same time, I'll grab one of those students and pull them into the grand piano. And I'll say, let me hear what you've been working on. And let's see if I can give you some ideas on how to practice. So yeah, there are days that we don't touch the software, expect them to use it at home. But I would say more than 50% of the time, we're actually in the software working just because we've learned how effective of a tool it is.
Right. Now, you've mentioned it a number of times that software is great for note reading, rhythm reading, those kinds of things, but less for phrasing, dynamics, shaping, expression. What would you say to teachers who are quite strong advocates for students playing always with the dynamics and the articulation and phrasing right from the first time they practice a phrase in order to build that into their muscle memory? Because that's not something that the software can really pick up.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, it's an interesting thing to think about, because I was, being a traditionalist, I used to do a lot of talking in my lessons and explaining why they're going to do this and demanding that they hold the notes out the full time and demanding that they do this and this. And the longer I've taught, the more I realized that I talk too much. Need to let them,
we all, you
know, dig in. And it's the weirdest thing, the things that I used to think would be developing bad habits, they're just really building those fundamental skills, and I can't teach them that next level until they get that down. For instance, holding a note not long enough, I used to think if they build a bad habit, it's going to be terrible. But there's a level of thinking, some things take more processing in your brain than others. And holding down the note does not, I don't know why, but it does not take nearly as much processing power as it does just finding the right note and hitting it on the right beat. That release is so much easier. And so a lot of times I just let slip by and say, when they're ready for the next layer, then I will teach them. I will bring it up when it's relevant to them. And a lot of this relevance is the thing that I've learned lately is it just goes in one ear and out the other until it's relevant. And so I was a lot of times just putting too much effort into things that just weren't relevant at the time. But you're right, is going back to your question of the teacher's role and seeing that they play their articulations well and crescendos. I've had a lot of teachers ask, well, can you make the software detect staccatos and dynamics? And we start getting into the artistic side of thing, and that's very dangerous because you don't want your students sounding like a computer. You don't want a staccato to always sound like the exact type of staccato. And so once a computer starts telling you, no, you're wrong, it starts taking away from the artistry. So we steer clear away from, you know, assessing too much of the artistry part of performing. Mostly it's just get the note right, get it on time, and then the teacher takes over and teaches the artistry.
And that's why we are still required in the lessons. If students are using this kind of software, it's still important to have a teacher there. And also for things like hand shape, movements, rotations, you know, all how they're sitting at the piano, all of that stuff, we're still there for and still required for.
And your teacher has to be on their toes like all the time, and they have to be learning new tricks and new techniques and new ways to teach different students, because no student is the same, and you're always thinking and revising and, you know, sometimes pulling your hair out trying to think, how can I get through to this student? And that's something technology cannot do. So the teacher's job is really the hardest job in the world, I think, because they have to be on their toes, always assessing and changing and adapting to new students.
Right. So what kind of music and levels are there in the software that the students can play?
You know, at the MTNA, I thought it was fun. There's a 13-year-old boy that walked up and he said, hey, I want, you know, I'm kind of outgrown past this software. I'm like, you're not growing past this software. He's like, what do you have? I said, you know, this 13-year-old, I said, I want you to try La Campanella. So Franz lists La Campanella, and he's like, all right, I'll try it. And I was shocked. That kid started going through some of the, like, the part seven of that, the last section of it. And he just kept coming back over and over and over. And he got through that thing. He actually finished a gold trophy on the entire La Campanella in 2 months and performed it for an audience 2 months later.
No way.
Phenomenal. So I thought, man, if he can do that, I got another student who's 11. I'm like, I'm going to give it to him and see how he does. And he took to it and he started learning it. There's no way I'd give students, you know, really difficult repertoire like that until this software came around, just because it would be too much work on me.
That's a piece of music that I tried to play many years ago and gave up very quickly. So I'll have to get back into it with your software.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before that teachers can upload their own music. Was that right?
Yeah, that is correct. We have a new beta where you can go into the library. There's an upload button. You just click on upload and you'll see the little button at the bottom that says upload my own. You just add a MIDI file and an XML file. So the MIDI is the sound and the XML is the music notation. So you put that in there and you can chop it and mince it into learning segments even now and put in your own tempos.
Right. I was going to say the teacher must have to set up that this is level one, I assume, because the software doesn't automatically do that.
That's right. Yeah. And so another thing you can do, let's say you don't want to do that much work, you can take a piece that's in there and you can just duplicate it and put it into your library and you can start editing it. So you can say, you know, I would actually teach this song differently, or I would learn it differently. So I want to split it up my own way. And you can just kind of just change it a little bit. It saves a lot of work, but you can really have the flexibility to do what you want it to do.
And you also have written a heap of music, fresh music, right? Composed music in there too. So yes, you've got the Chopins and the classical composers, but you've also got a whole lot of Aaron music, right?
Yeah, we have thousands and thousands of songs. I just had a call from FJH Publishing Company. They want to put their music in there. We're doing a deal with Alfred and Hal Leonard. So we've got a lot of the publishers in the software already. A lot of other smaller publishers will put their stuff in the software and start promoting it that way, because it's a really, really good way to promote their work, and just anybody in the world can pick it up and learn it incredibly fast.
Well, it's good to know the publishers, who can sometimes come across as a bit old school in some ways with regard to print and stuff, are coming on board with the digital, because that's definitely the way things are going to go. Yeah. Have you come across any negative impacts of using software like this in the studio?
I don't know. I have never seen some really negative impacts of it. I'm trying to think. A lot of times there are things that I just don't see the big picture until I start getting into working with students on it. So I don't know the tricks until I start experimenting with students. Negative impacts. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Oh, that's okay. Well, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
what about equipment? So let's say there might be some teachers listening who are going, oh, this actually sounds really, really interesting. I'm keen to learn more. What do they need? What equipment do they need?
That is a good question. I had, when I first did the software and I was thinking of using it in my studio, I told my students, hey, I'd like you to go try this out, get a keyboard that you can interface with a computer. And, you know, only a third of my students jumped in and said, yeah, I'm going to do it. And I thought, oh, it's a bummer. But I really didn't know how it would work personally, because I hadn't really tried it on a lot of students yet. So it was just a theory in my head. So I was happy a third of them started. And the other third are like, you just told us to get rid of our keyboards and get real pianos. I'm like, but after 6 months, we did a recital, and the students who had done it, they were so far beyond the other students that the parents were kind of angry at me. And they're like, why didn't you make us do it? I'm like, I didn't know the impact until, you know, after this. But after that point, I said, everybody's got to get a keyboard. If you're going to study with me, it's just too fast and too easy to teach with. So I said, if you don't want to get a keyboard that'll interface with your computer, I will give you a number for another teacher and you can learn the slow way until you're ready. And then when you're ready, you can come back. So what you need right now is either what kind of device, a PC, a personal computer, either Mac or Windows will work, or an iPad. We are developing it for the Android device, Chromebooks, but that's not ready yet.
Okay. And you need a digital piano to plug it into. This doesn't work with acoustics.
Yeah, and I've done it with a variety of digital pianos. Let's say a student's, you know, they're just a beginner, or they're not totally sold on it. I'll tell them, you know what, just go get that cheap $150 keyboard with a MIDI connection. That's all you need.
Yeah, so it's got to have a USB out.
Yeah, a USB port on there. Or sometimes those older keyboards will have a MIDI in and MIDI out, and you can get an interface cable that'll connect to your device. For an iPad, you actually need, the way you connect that is with a lightning, I think they call it the camera adapter. It's basically putting a USB port on your iPad and you just plug it into that. Or you can do the iPad through Bluetooth nowadays. Some digital pianos have a Bluetooth connection. Some you can get a little port that turns it into a USB, a MIDI Bluetooth connection. Now, as far as expensive pianos, personally, I like the acoustic piano the best. And so they make little devices that you can put into your acoustic piano that allows you to interface with your computer. That's the coolest one of all, I think.
Yeah, and probably expensive, I would imagine. I'm not sure how much those kits cost, but I don't think they're cheap.
Yeah, it's about $1,500 USD.
Right.
So it's expensive. It's like buying a nice digital piano.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, the effects of using it on your grand, which I really enjoy practicing on my grand.
Yeah. And so tell us how much it costs and what do teachers get? Is there a free trial? Those kinds of things.
Yeah. In fact, I never have teachers go in and just buy the software. I say, just go in, say, start the free trial. And so they'll go in, there's a place, just create a free trial. And then it gives you a period of 30 some days where you can just practice and see how well you like it. A couple of the things on the free trial aren't included, like the Hal Leonard and Alfred content. You have to have a premium account to get access to that.
Right.
But there's thousands of songs you can get just on the free trial. And then once that period's over, it drops down to like just a few hundred songs you can get with the free account.
Great. So really, if you've got a laptop, which
let me tell you the cost. It's I think in Australia where you are, it's a little different conversion rate. I think it's 15 Australian dollars per month.
Okay.
And then
for US?
In the US, it's 15. And then if you have a promotional code, which I think you have one, a promotional code, Tim Topham or something, or Topham.
I don't know. We'll have to check that. Are we able to share that with listeners to get them a discount?
Yeah, I think if they type in Topham, then they get a discount. So it'd be $12 a month or $99 for the year.
Great. And is that ongoing?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So we'll make sure that that works. Use the code Topham, T-O-P-H-A-M, when you're signing up. But as Aaron says, do the free trial first. You'll get a real feeling for how it works. Set aside an hour and a half or something in your studio to set it up, try it out. As I've said before, I've seen it in action with Aaron actually Skyping to my student and helping him get to know the software. He chose this very cool piece. What was it called? It was like a tarantella. It was one of your pieces, Aaron. What was it?
Cecilia. Yeah, that was Seviana, I think.
Seviana. It was, just so, so cool. Very chord-based, sort of arpeggiated, but it just had this Spanish flavor. And it was real proof of just how engaging it was when he saw that he didn't get the full score and he had to get it better and better and better. And then he was able to do the left hand and then he put it together. And in such a short amount of time, as you've said, kids are getting things that they would otherwise take months to do. So I was really excited by that. And that's why I was really happy to have a chat with you today about it. So look, thank you. We'll start wrapping things up now. Aaron, we haven't talked much about the sight reading software that you have. But I have to say that I tried that out at MTNA as well, and that was very frustrating in some ways as well, because I just wanted to keep beating my previous score. And I also was able to compare my score to other people. I think that that's a really useful skill for students, again, to actually see where is your sight reading level. And you've created an actual scale, right? So is that part of the software that they're signing up to, or is that an extra?
No, it's all part of the software. So you, if you get the software, you got everything.
Great. And on their free trial, can teachers actually take the sight reading test and see what they're like?
They can.
Fantastic. Yeah,
if they're brave enough to see what their own sight reading score is, you might want to do it in the in a room all by yourself.
Well, I did it in the exhibition hall, and I was just pleased to have got over 1,000. I think I got, I can't remember if it was 1030 or 1300, but I thought it was okay.
Good job. You Thank actually you. Beat me. That was actually one of the reasons I developed the software, is because my sight reading was horrendous. And I was actually doing a doctorate, and my reading was about in the 500 level, because I snuck my way into the program without putting on, I couldn't read. But mine's nearing 1,000. My goal is to pass 1,000 by the end of the year.
Right. Well, good luck with that. And let's see what other people say when they try it out. We'll have to get some comments in the show notes happening for this episode. So, guys, if you would like to check out more about Piano Marvel, just head to pianomarvel.com. I think that's right, isn't it, Aaron?
Yes.
And as he said, sign up for the free trial. And when you're ready to commit, if you'd like to sign up, just head to just use the coupon code TOPHAM, T-O-P-H-A-M. We'll make sure that's going to give you a good discount. And that will work for wherever they are in the world, I assume.
Yes.
Yep. Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time. Aaron, is there anything that we didn't cover today that I've forgotten to discuss with you?
You know, there's so much there that I think how you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. So just get in there, start playing. You'll find treasure troves of stuff that's fun in there.
Yeah, just like a video game, you'll unlock more and more of its secrets and features and things like that as you go. But I think this has been a really great overview to give teachers an idea of its what it's for and how it works. So thanks heaps. Appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure.
I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Aaron from Piano Marvel. It's really got me thinking about how our roles as teachers is changing and is only going to evolve more over time as technology improves and we understand better how to incorporate it in our teaching. I guess my biggest takeaway is probably that if technology in any area can potentially do something better than we can, for example, in the case of Piano Marvel, you know, just teaching the notes and getting kids motivated to practice, then it allows us more lesson time to do the things that computers can't. And that's add emotion, interpretation, creativity, the relationship we've got with our students and all that kind of great stuff. And if that's the case, then this is something that we should potentially take quite seriously because it's likely to end up in a better outcome for our students. Interestingly, later on in this season too, you're going to hear from performer and YouTuber Josh Wright, who also unexpectedly mentions how he uses Piano Marvel in his teaching, which I think is really interesting. So stay tuned. That's going to be coming up in episode 7. So what do you think about all this? Is our studio teaching going to be taken over by computers? Can computers do things better than us? And if they can, then why don't we let them and focus on other things? Please leave a comment on the show notes page or let us know on Facebook where you see or hear this podcast or on YouTube for that matter. And remember that if you would like to try out Piano Marvel in your own studio, you can use the code TOPHAM, T-O-P-H-A-M, for your monthly discount. All right, so on to some reminders before we wrap up today's episode. And I'm very excited to be in Auckland, New Zealand next week. We've got a workshop and lunch on Thursday, the 9th of August, 2018 in Howick at one of my followers' studios. So thank you very much, Susan, at Allegro for letting us use your studio and helping kind of organize my trip over there. If you haven't found out about this and you would like to join us and you're over in New Zealand, then please do contact support@timtopham.com to get all the details. And I'm very excited too because we've got our course on lead sheets and teaching chords based on lead sheet kind of reading coming up really, really soon. So next week, I'll be holding another Facebook Live video all about lead sheets and preparing teachers for this new course. So make sure you've liked my Facebook page so you get notifications about when that'll be happening. As usual, if you've got a second and haven't already done so, I would be absolutely delighted if you could leave me a review either on Facebook or on iTunes. And you can find out about how to do that by heading to timtopham.com/iTunes. And letting you know too that we've recently updated my app with a cleaner interface. There's also a link on the front page to workshops. So even if you weren't able to attend one of my workshops this year, you can still find out what you missed and also access a calendar of events coming up and also the replays for a number of my webinars. We're also working on allowing the podcast to play when the app is backgrounded, like you can on the native podcast players. It's not currently possible, but it's something we're working hard on at the moment. So it will mean that if you turn your screen off and pop your phone in your pocket, you'll be able to continue listening. So we'll be able to tell you more about that coming up in season 4. Stay tuned. Next week on the podcast, I have two very special guests who many of you will know. They are called the Curious Piano Teachers, and they're based over in the UK. And our discussion is focused on a little bit about their own background and how they got started working together, and then a more general discussion on professional development for teachers and how that landscape has been changing over the last few years. We're also going to dive into a course that they've created to help teachers achieve their diplomas in either the ABRSM or Trinity College London teacher diploma courses over there. So stay tuned for that. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'll catch you next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.